Today is Thursday. It's July 20th, 2017. It's 11:21 in the morning. This is John Williams. We are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this heard on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 a.m.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, Made in America columnist for the Tribune. Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
You think the president would have learned after the one picture of him driving a truck near the White House that he doesn't photograph well pretending to be a big rig driver, and yet there at the Made in America rally that they were having on the White House lawn, there was a Made in Wisconsin fire truck, and he got behind the wheel of it like a kid with a new toy, and he pretended like he was driving really fast. And maybe the optics of that are good for some, but I just thought it made the president look ridiculous.
Well, that's a low bar. I mean, that's just so
it
much.
Was the same. He did the same thing with a truck earlier, and it was also on the day that the health care bill imploded in the House.
Right.
Now, it was a zombie bill, and it came back, and then it came over to the Senate, and then when he got and pretended to drive another truck on the White House lawn, the health care bill collapsed in the Senate on the same day.
So. I thought it was interesting that each state brought something that they made, and Illinois brought pension debt. I thought that was a pretty cool thing.
What did we bring, by the way?
It might have been from Cat. I think it was Cat.
Harley Davidson made of Wisconsin. What do we bring?
I think it was from Caterpillar, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. The president at least served as a terrific meme on that first truck driving photo because it was healthcare going over the cliff with him behind the wheel. The president now says that he thinks that Jeff Sessions, he would not have hired Jeff Sessions if he knew he was going to recuse himself from the investigation. Which is funny, our Steve Cochran pointed out this morning that the timeline doesn't work out. When Sessions took the job, he didn't know that he was going to be in a position to recuse himself. The president didn't either. Anyway, now he's upset that Sessions recused himself.
And think about what he said there. He said this was unfair to the president that he had to recuse himself, meaning that Trump lost some control of the investigation. The guy doesn't understand rule of law. He doesn't understand separation of powers. I mean, what an admission to say that I wish that I had more control over this investigation of me. Of course you do, but you don't say that.
He had said, I wish I could obstruct more easily, it would have been only slightly clearer what his intention was.
Another thing in that interview, since we're talking about this, is the interview with the New York Times on Wednesday afternoon. He intimated that he had some sort of dirt on Mueller. Was running the independent investigation. He says, well, you know, I have some other conflicts of interest. I'm not going to talk about those now, but they may be coming out later. It was reminiscent of what he said to Comey about there might be tapes.
And
he better hope it's not recorded.
There is a sense that he is a bully. I mean, all the other, you know, he's a bully. He's a toddler behind the wheel of a truck. This impulsive, nasty behavior that he has. And I thought that was so sinister and disgusting, and you're making the face, John, of being so bored with this.
That's not me being bored. I'm sorry if I'm throwing that off. Aaron.
I think the public is just inured to this at this point. They're like, oh, that's Trump.
That's the challenge.
That's Trump.
You have to say that you're right. There has to be, and it's almost daily now. Let's take a step back and look at what's happening and really consider what just happened. Did this just happen? So you had the president of the United States saying in an on-the-record recorded interview, my attorney general is a waste. I wish I didn't have him. I wish I had never appointed the guy. Has that ever happened? Do you guys ever remember that in our lifetimes ever?
The reason he didn't want, I mean, it's not like he's turned out to be some sort of disappointment because he's done something that throws a poor shadow on the government or on the administration. He's upset about it because he lost control of this investigation, he shouldn't have any control of this investigation.
But that's B. You start with A. You know, start with A, just the fact that he would say something like that out loud. You're right. And then B, the fact of what it's really about.
Well, then, I mean, turn it onto your own life. If your boss had publicly said, I should never have hired John, I should never have hired Eric, I should never have hired Scott. I mean, publicly said that?
Scott, you're talking to two radio guys. I think that's probably really happened.
Our bosses have
said they have said that. Yeah.
I know some of our listeners have.
But not in public.
In public. I mean, maybe.
Well, so then he says, and if Mueller goes too far astray from the Russian investigation, then he wouldn't rule out asking I guess, Rosenstein to get rid of him. And then he said, but he's not crazy about Rosenstein because he's from Baltimore. And there's no Republicans in Baltimore. Again, feigning that he wants control of the process or a favorable view.
Not feigning. Declaring.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they should have put a good Republican in
there. There's nothing nuanced about this presidency.
Normally, I would say that if he fired Mueller, that would be an extinction-level event for his presidency. But I don't think there is such a thing.
No, I don't either.
I've come to think that he floats above all normal strictures and that he can go ahead and do that and he'll survive.
I think
he's going to still have 36% support.
The extinction event could be 2018, and if the House goes Democratic, then I think you see impeachment proceedings beginning on a myriad of levels.
Well, right, the House draws up the articles. But, right. I mean, I've said all along, haven't we all understood that the midterm for – I mean, that the next congressional election is really going to be the bellwether. It's not these special elections in Montana or Missouri or Kansas or Florida.
I think that's wrong. You know, I mean, I think it's right and I think it's wrong because that – whether or not you can win an election shouldn't be the standard of whether you are – cooperating with a hostile government or whether you're violating every ethical sort of trust placed in you, the fact that you can obfuscate that and win in the midterms shouldn't exonerate that.
Well,
so,
but that's the trial in front of the jury of the voters, and I kind of disagree with you on that. It is going 2018 is going to be whether or not the voters are okay with this.
But 36%, I don't think carries the day.
But my point is though that this should be above. This is a little beyond governing or politics. Right. I mean, this is criminal justice. And if you can, you know, should actually the day after the midterms in what would have been 1998, I was hosting a Sunday morning show and I had John Porter and Ray LaHood on, two Republican congressmen. Bill Clinton had won, picked up seats in that with the impeachment sort of scandal beginning to brew. The Democrats picked up seats in that midterm. And those two guys, two great congressmen, both said on my show, well, the impeachment's off. It's not going to happen. And it did. You know, a month later, LaHood was presiding over the impeachment hearings.
He was.
I don't think we should judge this by who wins elections. This is something extraordinary aside from that. It's not about, you know, whether he can go to the voters who always get it right and win.
But in a perfect world, that's true. But you and I both know that Congress is imperfect and that impeachment is, in fact, we learned through Clinton is in fact a political act. It's not a legal act. I mean, it's in the guise of legality,
sure.
But it's a political action. And whether or not, you know, so if it's a Republican House, the chances are nominal. Listen, I agree with you. I still wake up every morning and hear a newscast, Bertram say, you know, President Trump today. I go, wait, that actually happened?
President Trump these days?
Wait, what? That can't be right.
What's the matter, Eric? What were you thinking?
I was just thinking about what, you know, what's going to happen if there is a Republican House or a Republican Senate. You mean
Democratic?
Oh, Democratic. If the Democrats take over, you think Trump's not getting anything done now? He'll get absolutely nothing done.
Oh, nothing's done. Name one piece of major legislation that's
passed. Well, you can't, right? You can't already. You're right. I mean, they may be able to come up with a tax plan. I don't know. I mean, the tax plan's going to be.
What that's going to be.
It's been. When was the last really major tax overhaul? Was that in the Reagan
George
years?
Bush? No, read my lips.
That wasn't really a big tax overhaul, though. I'm talking about more.
Yeah, that was a nominal increase along the edges.
Oh, that was more of a budget deal.
But I think that the chances of Trump accomplishing anything is, and if he loses the Senate, he won't even be able to appoint. I don't think they'll allow him to appoint a replacement Supreme Court justice.
After the Senate failed to actually put forward a vote on health care, the president calls all of the Republican senators in for lunch, and he sits two of the opponents next to him. I'm amazed at how cooperative the Republican senators are, members of the House for that matter. I mean, everybody has their own circumstances, state, constituencies, beliefs, but that they would all go there and laugh at his jokes and watch him ridicule the Nevada senator who wasn't on board and then sort of hold his reelection over him.
Another act of bullying, I thought.
Yeah, he said, you want to win re-election. You're going to come around or something like that, he said.
Heller has an interesting problem because Sandoval is the governor out there, right? And he's Republican, now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, he's running for re-election. He's in a really tough spot because, you know, Republicans are remaining loyal to Trump. Like 85-90% of them are remaining loyal to Trump. You've got to get through a primary if you're going to, you know, hope for re-election. And then you've got to thread the needle and win re-election in a state that's not all that red. So, you know, you've got a guy like Keller. And so he's feeling this pressure. He's already come out against the Senate bill at various times. So the idea that he's got an easy decision to make is
a peripheral issue.
He's a Republican.
He's a Republican.
And but this is something that obviously informed these Republicans to defect from this bill. Is and it wasn't widely reported, but the Congressional Budget CBO came out and with the bill. And it turns out if they pass, just get rid of the Obamacare, 32 million Americans will be uninsured.
The news keeps getting better.
Premiums would nearly double.
So I'm sorry, go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say it's 32 million Americans who will not. In all likelihood, vote Republican.
So if you're Senator Senator Heller from Nevada, right, it wasn't an accident that he was seated next to the president, and I'm not faulting him for this. I'm just wondering, when do you say, yeah, no, I'm not going to sit there?
That's my question. That's my point.
I'll sit down the table. I'll sit across from you. You don't get to pick.
Or maybe I'm not going to go to this lunch because I know what it's
going to be. Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe, and you know, there'd be consequences for that because it would be reported that you rebuffed the president. You didn't go to the lunch. You weren't part of the team. But I don't understand how there's that much equity in being on President Trump's team. We played back after the Senate bill failed. It didn't fail, right? It didn't come up for a vote.
It will come up. They're going to bring it up later. But
what Mike Pence said. You played the sound bites of how the president spoke about it, and you played the sound bites of how Mike Pence spoke. Pence sounded good. He sounded presidential. He's sounding more presidential all the time. Maybe we're putting him in that box. But I think Pence... Some of the things a spokesperson has said, some of the statements he's made, make it almost sound like, you know, maybe this is, again, putting him in a box that he doesn't belong in, like he's distancing himself, like he's preparing himself. And clearly, even though I don't agree with Pence on a lot of things, I would make that trade in a heartbeat. I would deal with a conservative who has really ultra views quite different than my own, but at least I know he came to them in a sane way, literally a sane way. And you don't feel that way about the current resident of the White House.
Yeah, that's true. And, of course, the vote that they're going to be making the senators cast about whether they're going to just repeal Obamacare, they've cast this vote before, and this is McConnell's wedge on them, which is like, you voted 2 years ago to repeal Obamacare. What's changed? Are you going to break your promise? Are you going to? And the truth is what changed was they were not playing with live ammunition 2 years ago. They knew that they could do all they could pass anything they wanted to about health care, and Obama would veto it, and they could go back to their constituents and say, I tried. And so the idea of repealing it and saying in 2 years we'll come up with a replacement plan, and McConnell referred to it as a bipartisan replacement plan that they were going to come up with in 2 years, that's insane because they've had 9 years to come up with a plan. They haven't come up with one. It's a really difficult problem to solve. And so the idea that you're going to cast this vote to repeal Obamacare because you promised once that you were going to, before you really realized what you were getting into. And I don't know why McConnell's going to force his people to take that vote, because that vote, Scott just quoted the CBO, 32 million people, each district is going to have, or each state is going to have a certain number of people who would be thrown off Medicare. And the opposition ads write themselves. You know, Senator Jones, he voted to repeal Obamacare and throw, you know, 6 million members of our state off of Medicare.
Well, and Senator Jones would counter with the fiction that, well, this gives us 2 years to work on something better.
They had 7 years before this, and this is coming from someone who likes conservative answers to these kinds of issues and free market issues. They had 7 years. My great disappointment in all of this is the fact that they had 7 years to come up with something creative, interesting, and frankly, embracing of people's needs, and it was pretty much, nah, you're screwed.
Well, the last thing I'll say about this, and I say that way too often, is that President Trump has to own this. He said he doesn't, but it's his job to persuade Congress. It's his job to lead. He didn't write the bill. I don't know if he read the bill, but he, you know, what did he pledge? It was his promise, day one, repeal and replace. And now he says, I'm not going to own it. Well, yeah, okay, you don't want Obamacare. Obamacare doesn't want your name on it anyway. That's fine. But the inability of the Congress to fix it is on Donald Trump, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. He ran that he wanted to own the health care problem, and he owns it. And, yeah, the exchanges need support in Obamacare. Obamacare is, in certain places, falling apart. Not everywhere. In certain places, it does need to be tweaked. And the Republicans and Democrats need to get together and try to save it. Or they can – and there are certain things that Trump can do that would actually destroy it. And he might well do that.
Do you think they're – speaking of owning or whatever, I mean, I'm waiting for the Congress to recognize that it is an equal branch of government and just sort of disown the president. just step aside, you know, relegate him to the ribbon cutting and work on their own tax plans and work on their own health care and just sort of ignore the noise up the street, you know, put them aside and work on their own. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you would say they're doing that with health care. I don't think that they are. I think they should maybe just exclude them altogether and work on it that way. Is that crazy?
Well, in a way, isn't that what they did with the health care
bill? Yeah,
as I started
making that brilliant point, I realized maybe they already tried it.
Well, but. And his tax plan, Trump's tax plan, he wrote on a napkin, didn't he, or something, or one piece of paper? I mean, he's not a deep thinker. He's not a policy guy at all. So he's not going to be able to. He hasn't dictated the terms of whatever health care plan. He just wants something to sign.
Keep going back up there, and they go to the Rose Garden for the ceremony. You know, they keep pretending that he's a partner, that he's a player in it. He's not going to go to bat to support anything that they do. Why don't they just cut him off? Yeah. You know, do it on your own.
I think
sign something, send it up, and say, now it's on you. You sign this or you don't.
Yeah, really.
I think it's not what you want, but now
it's on you.
Right. I think they may start doing that. I do, but.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Springfield. So we have our own sort of interesting politics here, Eric. Just kind of, you wrote three pieces and crowed a little bit about it on Twitter this week.
I don't know if I crowed about it. I've written a lot about Governor Rauner lately.
That was what I thought you were crowing about.
Well, I guess I'll crow about my columns, yeah. I mean, they are essential reading. I mean, essentially what happened was that he held out. He held out for more than 2 years on the budget. He wasn't going to negotiate a budget with the Democrats until they caved in on some of his anti-union, pro-business changes that he once made in the law. The Democrats wouldn't go. Finally, the Democrats, with some Republican help, passed a budget that included some tax increases and some spending cuts. And this was an incredible gift to Rauner, in my view, because Rauner was able to – he vetoed this budget, and then he went and overrode the veto. This is an incredible gift to Rauner because it allows him to get the money that he desperately needs to keep the state from hemorrhaging money. I mean, we're not by any means on, you know, sailing the seas serenely, but he has – we're back on some sort of solid footing. We were about ready to go to junk bond status. That doesn't seem like it – look like it's going to happen. And he's able to have this tax increase that nobody wants a tax increase. So he's able to say, this is Mike Madigan's 32% tax increase. I fought against it, but Mike Madigan raised your taxes. Great campaign issue. It was my theory, my belief, that he should have been high-fiving and doing the happy Snoopy dance around his office, that he got a double win there. And instead, he's had this strange tantrum where he's cleared out a whole bunch of people in his administrative ranks. You know, people in his communication staff and his policy staff.
His chief of staff,
who
right?
His chief of staff, the people who are sort of moderating influences on him. And he's basically replaced them with people from the Illinois Policy Institute, which is a hard right, you know, conservative libertarian think tank. I mean, these are people who sort of come up with wacky ideas. And, you know, it's kind of like I think of them as like the dorm hallway of think tanks. They think of like, why don't we do a budget where there are no tax increases? And what we'll do is we'll take all the money away from like colleges, and we'll take the money away from local municipalities, and we'll slash worker wages, and that's how we'll do it. It's like these politically naive and impossible solutions that they come up with.
Wow.
Anyway, he has replaced an incredible number of people on his staff with people from this organization, which is, you know, sort of this Koch brothers type hard right politics as a way to go into this election. I don't get it. I don't think it's a winning strategy. I think he's giving into some strange impulse that I don't understand politically or policy wise.
I don't think that the Illinois Policy Institute has faults, no doubt, but I don't think it's wacky. I think it's actually pretty thoughtful and offers really interesting solutions to profound Illinois problems which have not been addressed for, I don't know, yeah, ever. But in fact, the Rauner's staff is now going to be dominated by people from the Illinois Policy Institute. It's a fascinating move. I mean, this is Dan Proft, who's on a competing radio station, is and John Tillman, who's the CEO of the place, and now the de facto governors of Illinois, which is I've never seen anything quite like this.
Yeah.
And they're all in. If they lose in the fall, which, you know, I'm still guessing that Rauner will not win re-election, but you never know.
Why is he doing it?
Why is he doing that? I think they're looking at the Trump model, frankly. I think they're looking at the way that if you're the businessman with no experience, you're kind of wandering, waffling, don't have a strong sense of why you're even in the position. Here are people who are telling you exactly what you should be doing. And I think they project themselves as authoritative, and they are.
Authoritarian.
I don't think that's true. I think they're authoritative.
What do you make of that group, Steve?
Well, to me, that implies that Rauner wants the job as because of the power of it, not to do what he thinks should be done, right? I didn't think he was
going to... Well, that's Donald Trump's model, that's for sure. I'm sorry, keep
going. No, yeah, but I mean, I thought Rauner came in and he said, these are the business things we need to do, and he wasn't so ideological. If he's going to adopt the Trump model to sort of demagogue, to hold on to the office... that seems out of character.
I think he's frustrated. Yeah. I think he's had failures, numerous failures. Fighting against Mike Madigan is very, very difficult, as you know, seven other governors have found out.
Yeah, but you don't fight against somebody. You don't make political progress by starting off your campaign and then your administration by just insulting people. I mean, he's been calling Mike Madigan corrupt and sleazy. And then you got to sit down and make a deal with this guy. You got to figure out how Mike Madigan.
Well,
say what you like
fits.
About him. Say what you like about him. He's the Speaker of the House. He has and had a substantial majority. The Democrats had a supermajority. Have a supermajority in the Senate. You've got to figure out how to play this game. how to make the story end well for yourself. And he never did that because he's in business. He's the guy who comes in and says, "Okay, this is the way it's going to happen," and. He's not used to dealing with the other side saying, no, it's not going to happen that way.
Okay.
I mean, I think, and to come in and say, okay, he can now not run as the outsider who knows how to get things done because he's had more than 2 years.
Because he's the insider who hasn't.
He's the insider who hasn't gotten anything
Ooh,
done.
Ooh, that's a good one, Steve. They could use that.
Copyright Steve Rich, 2017.
But to get back, I mean, there's this sort of pure, unalloyed, philosophical bent to places like the Illinois Policy Institute where every problem, I mean, it's unions are the problem. I mean, we got, you know,
very predictable.
Cut small government. We don't like unions. They don't like organized labor, and it's just it's not right for Illinois. And Rauner didn't really run all that hard on that kind of stuff. He was very vague during the campaign. I'm going to shake up Illinois, shake up Springfield, bring back Illinois. But now that we've seen what his agenda really is, and he's brought in these people who are going to really emphasize that part of his agenda, I don't see how he wins. I thought. 2 weeks ago, I was thinking, well, that kind of does it. He's got a great issue, and he's going to sail to reelection. I thought with those themes and all the money that he's got. But I don't know now.
We're going to do our predictions now. Things that we're reading, watching,
recommendations,
listening to.
Yeah.
Predictions. Yeah, I said.
So totally predict mine. You're going to love these.
I did something I've never done before. I purchased a free TV show, the show Atlanta. Which,
well, then you overpaid, Steve.
the Donald Glover, you know, it's a set, like sort of the rap set around rap in Atlanta. And it won a couple of Golden Globes. I think it was nominated for some Emmys. So I thought, well, I'm going to check it out. And I went on demand. They're replaying season one, but I'd missed the first two. So I watched one, pretty good, watched the second one, liked it. And then it was like $10 to buy the rest of the season to watch on my own time. So now I am. And it's an interesting program.
So far, so good, huh?
Yeah, I really like it a lot. Atlanta.
Is it HBO? Or?
It's on FX.
FX.
But what's it about?
You know, Donald Glover. He's a singer, poet, rap star, and it's set in Atlanta. African American crowd, kind of around this one kid is a rapper who's found some success, and it's just kind of how this group of African Americans live in Atlanta today. That's where I am so far, and it's not a show. It's kind of unlike anything I've seen before.
Hmm. Yeah, you know what? We are watching at my house Mad Men, starting from the first episode going forward.
Oh, we haven't watched it yet?
Oh, well, we have. But for a variety of reasons, I won't bore you with them. I don't have TV yet, so we're watching shows that aren't live television. So we're watching some old episodes of some shows. And Mad Men is a good trip. It's a great trip. But my recommendation, actually, is go back to the Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com and pull up online the first articles that were written in that three-part series about property taxes in Cook County. And if you haven't done this already, type in your address if you live in Cook County, and you will see if your property taxes are maybe too high or maybe too low. Very fascinating, very interesting. The Tribune did a big story again this week after the county board had a session with Berrios, and Hal Dardick wrote the cover story, and Jason Grotto was involved in it again. It's a very interesting story. I think the Tribune's doing a great job on this, but I just want to remind you that if you're wondering where you are on the crosshairs on this thing, the Tribune came up with a really neat little thing.
And the rule of thumb is that if you're a wealthier person, the odds are that your house is undervalued, and if you're a less wealthy person, that your assessment overvalues.
Therefore, your taxes, follow.
So
it's kind of terrifying because you're probably not paying enough, I'm telling you.
I should have said spoiler alert.
What about you, Scott? What are you liking?
I got to tell you, I'm a Doctor Who nut. My wife and I love the show, and within that past week, they announced that the new Doctor Who is going to be a woman for the first time in the 50-plus year history of the show. And people have lost their nut on this stuff. It's Doctor Who, Nurse Who.
Nurse Who.
And just going, screw you.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's just like, her name is Jodie Whittaker, and they just announced today, like they have to announce this. This is how weird things get in this world of ours. They had to announce that she will be paid as much as Peter Capaldi, who is the current Doctor Who.
They're not real doctors, right?
I mean,
would matter if I think they were real doctors. I know actors and actresses should be paid.
Can girls time travel? I didn't know that.
Well, we're about to find out. I think this is awesome. It's about time. It's going to be fascinating to see the story arc. The whole show is based on the idea that the wondrousness and the beauty of humanity and its complexities. And this is just going to be one of those examples. And I mean,
so you're on board.
Oh, God, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I love the show. First of all, two things. You're right. Not a real doctor. It's a TV show.
So who's next? Is there going to be a female James Bond?
I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And what about, I know there's a Batgirl, but what about a female Batman?
They have Supergirl, they have Batgirl. I mean,
yeah, but those were patronizing bits of fluff, weren't they? I mean,
no, the series now, the Supergirl. No, that's not at all. She's very
Wonder Woman. I haven't seen the movie, but everybody says she's
that's empowering too. I think it's fine. I think it's great. I think it's about time. And Jodie Whittaker has a great reputation, so she'll bring a lot to the role. I love the show. I am perfectly fine with this. I am just like, this is delightful. This seems very normal and natural for that show progression. Watch Doctor Who if you haven't, especially when the reboot, which started in 2010. It's a delightful show. It really, really is.
How about you, Made in America, Zorn? What do you like?
Yeah, I've been listening to the audiobook of Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. It's really good.
Does he read it?
He reads it. He reads it really well. It's funny. It's informative. And you end up really liking the guy, which is
he's not right. They say people who've read it said he's obviously not running for president after this book. Why is that?
Well, it talks about some of the jokes that he has told over the years, things that he's been exposed for. He's written some satirical things that if you look at them, as he says, you run them through the dehumorizer, it makes him look like a pervert and worse. So I doubt he's running for president. He's 65, 66 years old?
Yeah, he wouldn't win. I don't know if he'd be a great president.
He was my senator,
yeah.
Have you talked to him?
No, many times, yeah.
And he's good, isn't he? I mean, he's
a terrible interview.
He's a terrible interview?
Therefore, I don't like him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think he's a great interview.
He's really
brilliant. And you know what? And the idea that a Saturday Night Live comic is now a U.S. Senate representing a state, and it's silly, and it's jokes, and it's not serious. You know, I'm telling you, he's not Kid Rock. He is a wonk. He's brilliant, and he drills down. He knows and cares about the issues. But he meanders. Oh, Lord, he meanders.
We actually got into a fight over dinner one time. Long story.
You and Al Franken?
Yeah.
First time I interviewed.
Name dropper.
It's going to happen.
Did you deserve it? I'm sure you did.
No, he did. He was wrong. I'm sorry. He was wrong. And we raised our voices, and apparently that's been talked about many years later.
Scott.
That's Scott Stanis. Eric Zorn, thanks for coming in, too.
Thanks for having us.
Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. This is The Mincing Rascals. Remember, you can hear portions of this Saturday mornings at 11:10. Ben Cortez, thank you for engineering this show. I see David Filipich in the producer's seat. It's typically Elif Garris over there. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.